It's time for Power Hour.
Blue 20!
Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news.
Hot rock!
A premium subscription is just a click away at irishsportsdaily.com. And now,
hot!
Your Power Hour host.
He's good.
I love him.
Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Franco. I've got my two co-hosts here with me today, and Jamie Uyama up there in Canada, of course, and Matt, happy-go-lucky Freeman. Matt, I even thought I saw you smile a couple times already.
Oh, yeah. Hey? It's a great week.
Oh, boy, we're going to have a lot of fun today. I'm looking forward to this. First, I wanted to remind everybody it's still a great time to sign up for irishsportsdaily.com. You can go to the front page there. Still runners, $19.99 from now until August 1st. Lots going on. The recruiting things are heating up. We got spring football still. We got the spring game. And lots going to happen in the summer. They're really focusing a lot on the next year's class. And so I think normally what we would see would be a lot of like 218 kids coming in. We'll see that. But I think you're going to see a lot of 219 kids come as well. And that's going to give them a nice head start and a nice jump on what they're doing out there. So also, if you hear some thunder and lightning, I don't have a soundproof studio, but it's kind of crappy here weather-wise. So you may hear some craziness going on in the background.
It's like 65, so it's all right.
I know. The weather's, you know, the temperature's fine, just a little bit of rain, but, you know, can't complain after the last 2 days here have been wonderful, so can't complain at all. Also wanted to mention, if you would, we greatly appreciate you sharing the show, if you would. You can go to the front page of Irish Sports Daily once we have the show published, and you can grab the link and send it to your friends, family. Just, you know, send the link, and we'd greatly appreciate that. Or there's a section there where you can click on the Twitter button or the Facebook button. That'll automatically share it to your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed. That would greatly help us out. We'd greatly appreciate that. Also wanted to mention, before we get going, if you want to advertise on the podcast, please email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. And I can give you all the details on that as well. Guys, we got to see a full practice on Friday, and we were able to get more insight in the team. And, you know, Matt, I'd say the first thing to me that stood out is a continued impressive play of Brandon Wimbush. He did have the one bad throw where he forced a ball in and it got picked off by Nick Watkins. But, again, he's just very active and very efficient and very much in command. I was just I've just been really impressed with him the entire spring. I love his demeanor as a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of enjoyed seeing him throw a pick just because we'd only seen him throw one off a tip ball, which wasn't really his fault. But, I mean, he bounced back from that pick on Friday and threw, I think, three touchdowns right after that. So I think that's exactly what you want to see from a young guy is him not really care about it and be able to continue to make plays. So I definitely agree in terms of he's looking impressive for the most part.
You know, the thing that stood out to me is like I remember watching it, Matt, and going, gosh, this guy is really on today. He's throwing the ball well, made a couple errant throws, and you're going to get that now and again. But the thing that, you know, when you read back kind of your play-by-play, it's like complete. And then most important, if you remember, guys, and Jamie, you'll remember this too, when they'd get in the red zone, they were awful. I mean, they couldn't complete anything. And they were very effective down there, not just Wimbush, but I thought Ian Book did a nice job too. We'll talk about him in a second, but that was encouraging to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think those post-corner routes to the back of the end zone, I think that's something that Notre Dame's going to utilize a lot this year. Wimbush has the arm strength, and he throws it really good. It's obviously a little bit easier on him when he has Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin, and Equanimeous back there. But, I mean, he hits probably 50% of those, so, I mean, that's pretty good percentage.
When you look at that, yeah, exactly, because, gosh, you know, Miles Boykin, again, is at least 6'4". Chase Claypool's at least 6'3", if not 6'4", E-cubed size. Then you got Alizé down there. Who do you cover? I mean, that's that should be something that is enticing. Of course, my cynical side of me is over here going, that's going to be too much for Brian Kelly to pass up down there in the red zone when he needs to run the football. So, of course, I hope that that's not the case. And to be honest, when you have that kind of size advantage, certainly you want to take advantage of it. And Wimbush has done a good job throwing the back shoulder throw in those situations, throwing a fade a number of times. They had a wonderful route that he hit. Dexter Williams on basically a flare out of the backfield, and Niles Morgan was running like all get out to try and beat him to the corner of the end zone, and it was a perfectly thrown ball. I don't think I've ever seen Notre Dame throw that pass, and I was like, okay, well, that's exciting too to see. So
yeah, I mean, if Wimbush hadn't put that on the money, I mean, Niles would have easily caught him. So
It was a big time throw.
Those little details that make the difference in scoring.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I don't want to put any undue pressure on him because he is going to be a first time starter. Look, this kid's going to make mistakes. Everybody does, and you know, especially early in your career, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. But gosh, I just love everything about his demeanor as a quarterback. I really do. I think he's just got the perfect mentality, confidence, shows great leadership. One thing that I mentioned in the practice report is, you know, they're running a brand new offense. It's not necessarily brand new, but it's a bunch of new terminology, guys lining up in different things. I don't think I have seen them stop a practice once and say, what are you doing? Why aren't you lined up? I haven't seen that the entire time. Have you?
No, I mean, it's been smooth. I mean,
communication's been wonderful.
I think probably 3-4 drives of 11-on-11 with Wimbush, and the first drive we ever saw, you took him down in 4 plays and scored with tempo, and then on Friday, I think it was 6 plays.
Yeah.
But a couple of them were inside runs with Josh Adams when they had shells on, so I mean, that's not
going to
be a big play, so I mean, he's moving the ball, moving the chains, and then ending it with touchdowns. So, I mean, I think that's pretty much what you want to see out of him.
Yeah.
I know that you and I had questions about how he'd look in 7-on-7 and the skeleton drill and all that stuff. But, I mean, he's mastered that. I mean, I think he might have had one incompletion that was a drop by Alizé on Friday in 7-on-7. So, I mean, it's about him just being more comfortable in 11-on-11 at this point.
That's actually my next point. I wanted to ask Jamie about this. It's, you know, Jamie, it's one thing to look really good, you know, even in 11-on-11 when you have a red jersey, you know. It's another thing to look really good when guys are breathing down your throat and they're going to hit you and hurt you. And that's usually what separates the good players from the great players and the not-so-great players to the good players. And so that, I mean, is that something that we should be concerned about? We really haven't seen him in that kind of an environment where it's all live bullets and, you know, by the way, this guy's going to hit me and it's going to hurt.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe concern is maybe a little bit too strong of a word because I think, you know, he is such a great athlete too, and he's a guy who could probably escape the rush, you know, and he can do some things out of the pocket. We've seen him move around, so we know that there's that. But I definitely think there is a different sense of it when, you know, you get hit that first time, and I doubt they're gonna make him live for the spring game because they don't want to take any chances with him. And I know, but he's been hit. The one thing though is he has been hit before in practice because I mean, they didn't see him as expendable or anything like that, but because he wasn't the guy, he did get hit a little bit. So maybe that'll help him, partially in this, but it is a different story when you have that rush coming in your face, when, you know, someone can hit your arm, when you're following through, you know, you can get finished on the ground, right? A 300 guy can be lying on top of you at the end of it. It changes the dynamic of everything. So, you know, I mean, you'll never know until he really gets kind of hit in the mouth and kind of how he's going to react. But something tells me Brandon Wimbush is kind of has the mentality to bounce back from that.
You know, when you watch his high school film, he reminded me a lot of Everett Golson and the fact that a lot of his big plays were made when things broke down. So that gives me some encouragement thinking that, you know, I guess all of his stats weren't him sitting, you know, straight up in the pocket and just delivering frozen ropes. It was him creating things on the run and on the move and when things broke down. So to me, I think that that's a nice thing to kind of put in your back pocket and hope that, you know, here's some hope that once the live bullets happen, he'll be able to handle it. So, Matt, Ian Book looked pretty solid. You know, we've been wanting to see him. The first day we saw him, he didn't look that good. But really, three times we've watched him, he's looked pretty solid. And I'm not saying he's a great quarterback at this time, but it doesn't look like it's too big for him. Like, the stage is too big. I mean, even Brandon Wimbush at times last year, you looked at what he was trying to do, and you could tell he was confused. With Ian Book, you don't really see that. I don't know if that's a, you know, them kind of simplifying things, simplify some checks, whatever. But I'm encouraged by what I see from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like Wimbush in the aspect that he's calm and cool in the pocket. You can tell he's put a lot of time in the film room. He knows exactly where he wants to go to with the football. He's kind of like Tommy Rees, unfortunately, sometimes where he knows he can't make a throw, and he'll still throw it. But I haven't seen, like, enough of that to be concerned with it. I think it's just him just trying to make a play in practice. The thing that impressed me the most out of both quarterbacks is I think the defense has kind of evolved a little bit because they were moving around a lot in the secondary on Friday, trying to confuse the offense. And outside of the one pick, I mean, they looked fine. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that speaks volumes of how comfortable Wimbush and Book are just with running the offense.
I think Book did have one pick in that as well, if I remember right. I think he did have another one, or he had one as well. I think Julian Love picked him off, if I remember right. So when I look at that and I say the other thing that stood out is he's very good with a read option. He had a couple plays there where they were focusing on it and just very decisive and making that made it for huge gains, you know. So Golson never looked that good running that. I didn't think Kaiser looked that good running it. And really, I don't think Zaire looked that good running it as good as Ian Book did. Now, again, these are just some various plays. They're not live. So we can't really, I guess, say, oh, he's going to be good at this. But in what we have seen, he looks pretty good. And, you know, and I guess Wimbush has certainly looked the best out of all those guys in that particular thing.
Yeah, when Wimbush pulls it and comes around that corner,
it's over. Yeah,
it's awesome.
I mean, it's going to be a sight to see. I can't express enough to the listeners how talented Brandon Wimbush is. He is, in my opinion, the most talented guy they've had here since I've been covering it, and it's really not even close. I mean, honestly, I just because he's so explosive as a runner. I mean, I think Kaiser has the body. But I think Wimbush is, you know, a good solid 6'2", if not 6'3". And he's got a big physical body now, too. He's got a stronger arm, throws the ball well. I love his demeanor more than I liked Kaiser's. And he's so explosive. You know, he's such an explosive athlete that he can be such a threat in the running game. So, again, I don't want to put too much undue pressure on him. And I know that's what I'm doing by saying it, but I'm just excited. I'm excited about what he can bring to the table.
Frank's excited about Notre Dame football, folks.
I'm excited about Brandon Wimbush for certain. The one thing that shocked me about this, though, Matt, is they continue to give Montgomery Van Gorder all these reps. Why? I just don't get it. I mean, and every time we've watched, Book has been far superior to Montgomery, and yet he's running number two half the time or most of the time. And is getting equal reps in everything they do other than team. When team comes, Book is the number two quarterback, and he gets all the reps. And that's great, but why give him so many reps? I don't understand it.
I'm not sure. The only thing I can think of is they're just trying to take a little bit of pressure off of Wimbush just so he doesn't throw as many balls. I mean, that's the only thing I've come to.
Well, then let Book throw them.
I mean, it's
Book needs the experience. Yeah. That's it doesn't make any sense to me, but it is what it is. Jamie, any thoughts? Why would they do that?
I don't know. Maybe they're trying to showcase him to see if he wants to transfer.
I just doesn't make any sense.
I will say he's not terrible though.
He isn't bad. Go ahead, Jamie. I'm sorry.
I don't think he's bad either. But I think if you're, you know, if you're really planning it out, you're hoping that Ian Book is that second quarterback, and you want to give him every chance to win that job. Maybe they're just doing it as a deferral because, you know, he has been there for so many years, and this is kind of really the first time that he's gotten extended reps because, you know, I mean, Brandon Wimbush wasn't even getting that many reps in previous years. So this is kind of his first chance. So maybe this is kind of his spring to kind of show, hey, you know, you're a guy here who you had some scholarship offers and you were, you know, we brought you in here and you've had a scholarship to kind of basically be the signal guy the last few years. So, here we're giving you a chance to kind of see if you can win that backup job. And, you know, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, in the long run, but, yeah, I mean, you just, if you didn't want it to come back and bite them if Book wasn't ready or he wasn't getting the amount of reps, that you want, but it does kind of, I'm a little bit surprised by it.
Which doesn't make any sense to me. You know, the only thing I can think of is you don't want to hurt his feelings. Well, I don't care. And, you know, I realize that Brian Kelly fired your dad and that's tough but that's college football. That's the way it is. So I just, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. And I like Monty. He's a good kid. You know, I don't know, he's not a bad player. But at the end of the day, you got to make sure your number two is healthy. Something could happen. You know, that he's advanced enough to be put in the game. I just think they're wasted reps. But again, it's not my call. So moving on to wide receiver, you know, we got to see quite a bit because EQ was out. He didn't really do much at all, you know, in the 11-on-11, 7-on-7, any sort of competition. They didn't do much. Stepherson was out, didn't do much at all, again, because of, you know, Brian Kelly says a hamstring. I got a bridge to sell you, but I'm just – it allowed us a really good opportunity, I think, to see Miles Boykin again and really Javon McKinley and really got to see Javon McKinley for the first time get a whole bunch of reps. And I thought both of them looked good. The thing that really stood out to me, I guess Claypool as well. We definitely got a chance to see Claypool as well. But the thing that really stood out to me is Miles Boykin. He's really starting to look like a number two. And if he continues to improve, he could possibly even be a number one just by the confidence he's playing with. And I'm telling you, folks, you should have seen this route that he ran on Nick Watkins. And Nick Watkins was completely baffled by what he did. And, you know, Fink, I don't think, could have ran as good a route as he did. And it's like a guy with that size should not be able to turn left and right as well as he did. And it was just an amazing route. He's showing great hands and playing with a lot of confidence. And that was really what my big thing heading into this is they got to find a number two. And right now, I really think Miles Boykin's a guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's easily the most impressive player on offense outside of Wimbush.
Yeah.
This spring for myself. I mean, he's always had a problem with concentration and not looking the ball in and dropping easy passes. This year, he's making those and making big-time catches. So I'm kind of curious to see if he can carry that momentum into fall camp, because if that happens, watch out.
I mean,
you're going to see a lot of Miles Boykin. I might be in the minority on this, but I didn't think Javon McKinley had that impressive of a day. I know you and some other people on the beat have kind of hyped him up recently, but I thought that he can't take contact right now, so I think that's part of the reason guys were kind of staying off of him a little bit.
Oh, for God's sake. Can you believe that, Jamie? Can you believe
what a hater.
Yeah, I just wasn't impressed.
Jeez.
They weren't even pressing him. They were pressing everybody else but Javon.
Yeah, come on, man. No, I think McKinley had a really good day. And I think he's gaining confidence. Now, I will agree with you, Matt, that last year he was not impressive. I was like, well, I don't get the high four stars. I don't see it. And I don't think that he felt comfortable. I don't think he felt confident. Maybe not even happy, you know, with his choice. And that happens a lot of times. From guys from California, they show up and they're like, man, what did I do? Why did I come here? You know, and they doubt and second guess. But I think I see a different Javon McKinley this year than I did last year. And he is hurt. There's no doubt that he was hurt. But now he's back. Showed really good hands, ran good routes, showed quickness that I hadn't seen before. For me, I want to see long speed. We haven't seen him really kind of stretch the defense and get vertical much. And so until I see that, I don't want to say he's going to be a player here. But he kind of reminds me of Ray McKnight before he got hurt. Guy with what seems to be really good hands, runs good routes, and was getting open. And you're like, he shouldn't get open that much because he just doesn't look like he's, you know, as athletic as some of the other guys. But I thought McKinley looked good. I really did.
I'd just like to see him with some contact and the ability to beat press coverage at the line because they're not pressing him. So
okay. All right.
I'll hold my judgment until he does it when guys can actually be physical with him.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Like, and it's, you play football.
So physical. Do you think – because Brian Kelly said that they're going to let him play in the spring game. Will they not hit him there either? Or?
He said they put a no contact jersey on him.
I guess did they say no contact jersey?
Yep.
Okay. So okay.
He would. I believe the gist of the quote was he couldn't be hit, be tackled, which is not football. So.
Yeah. Well, I understand that, but they are being physical with him. I mean, they are jamming him at the line of scrimmage.
They didn't jam him at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I watched it.
Let's go to the film.
We don't have. Can you believe this?
Pull up the telestrator.
Can you believe this, Freeman guy? Oh boy. So another player has really stood out to me is Nick Watkins. Had another really good day. Gave up a couple touchdowns. There's no doubt about that. But I just think his coverage is so much better, and he just looks more athletic than he ever has. He always looks so slow and plodding. Just not very athletic, couldn't turn left and right, but he's playing with so much more confidence. I like Nick Watkins. For the first time, I like Nick Watkins. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the touchdowns he gave up were in one-on-ones, so, I mean, DBs don't have a great chance of winning that because the receiver has the entire field to work with, so I'm not going to hold that against him. He was much better in the 7-on-7 and the 11-on-11, where it's kind of more football related. But yeah, I mean, he's been impressive. He, like you said, he's just moving around on the field a lot more better. And then he has his ball skills seem to have improved too, because he's going up and fighting for the ball. And I know he had that one pass breakup at Ohio State, but it's just kind of more plays like that we haven't kind of seen in the previous years from him.
He dropped another easy interception. I think it was a Montgomery throw in 11-on-11. And so he should have had two picks on the day and did a really nice job. You know, I think he did give up a touchdown in 11-on-11 to Boykin, I believe, on a great throw by, Wimbush. So, but other than that, I thought he really played well and played with a lot of confidence. And that kind of leads me to my next thing. You know, guys, I've been sitting here kind of thinking about it. And when you think about it, you know, Notre Dame has Love right now, Julian Love, who's really their best corner, I think. And he's playing with the most confidence and having the most success. They now have Nick Watkins. You know, Dante Vaughn didn't have his best day on Friday, got yelled at quite a bit, but he's shown that he's real solid. Troy Pride has had a lot of really good plays in spring, is gaining some confidence. And then we've got Sean Crawford. I mean, that's five corners that I really wouldn't have a problem running out there right now. I can't remember the last time I could say that about Notre Dame, and I think that's important to point out.
Yeah, I mean, there's quality depth there. And then just to go off what you said about Pride, he's the guy that has that makeup speed so he can close on the ball on like a crossing route or a deep shot. And he's actually shown that this spring where he's been trailing when the receiver makes his break, but by the time the ball gets there, he's right there. So he's caused a couple of pass breakups. So I think that's an encouraging sign because he wasn't doing that last year. And I think he's just getting more comfortable within the defense and just the college football in general.
One thing I wanted to point out, we found out over the weekend, is they released a lot of these kind of before and after pictures. You know, I think we got to see Julian Aquara, Tavon Coney, and KJ Stefferson, and it was like, wow, the difference was alarming. And it's like, that's essentially maybe three and a half weeks worth of work that he has done, and he's done a tremendous job of transformation. Now, I will say, you know, in one photo, it looks like the guys are flexing more than in the other, so it's going to be a little more impressive. But when you just look at the body size difference, it looked like Stefferson gained 11 inches on vertical. I mean, come on, that doesn't seem logical. 11 inches, you know, that's amazing. Now, again, maybe he was hurt or something and just didn't jump well that day. I don't know. But I was shocked at the transformation of some of these guys. And I guess the other part of that is, well, one, thank you, Bayless, for coming and fixing this problem. But two, how could you not know this was a problem? And why wasn't it fixed sooner? Jamie, any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but I mean, it just seems so ridiculous when you see the difference it made. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that, you know, Kelly was blinded by his friendship to Longo, and that's probably what caused where maybe if, you know, that wasn't his close friend, he wouldn't have or would have evaluated it a little bit differently. But, I mean, I think if you just walked off, you know, seeing your players walk off the bus compared to some of the other top schools that they're playing against, I think it would be obvious. And now, you know, when we go out to the spring practice and we see how guys look, we don't even need those built by Bayless before and after pictures to realize how these guys are, you know, physically transforming before our eyes, because they didn't look like that last year. You know, they didn't look like that last year. And a lot of those guys are just, now there's way more guys that look like they have future NFL type of bodies than they did before. And I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, you have this program where all these guys, you know, have obviously gone on to the NFL, but now, you know, you're looking at, I mean, it's a complete 180 in terms of where they are now compared to where they were.
They're starting to look a lot like Matt Freeman right now.
Yep.
Huge monster, you know, big physical guy. Matt, what did you think of all that?
I think that Bayless is making a big difference. I mean, that's, you can see it. And, I mean, we won't be able to tell on the field results until the first game. But, I mean, I think it's definitely been a positive. And, I mean, even if there's not huge changes in strength or on-field performance, I think it's simply giving them the confidence that his workouts and methods are working. And, I mean, that confidence goes a long way in college football.
I think that it's interesting you mention that, too, because to me, you know, we'll see some results. There's no question. We'll see it physically. I think we'll see it on the field, too. But just from things that you and I hear kind of inside the program from sources, is it's just a very positive thing that, you know, guys are more excited to actually do the work because they're seeing results and they feel like they are physically getting better. And to me, I think that that's a big thing and very important for this program.
Yeah, I mean, in long term, I don't think, like, the strength and stuff, I mean, like you said, it'll be noticeable this fall, but I think in 2018 is where you'll really start to see the entire strength and conditioning program, what it's actually doing. I think just a year's time is not enough of a time period just to see huge, huge changes, but you never know just because it was that bad. So.
Well, I think you will see strength being gained, and Notre Dame's players, because they're underprepared, will gain a lot more strength than, say, the other teams will, because, you know, they've had some of them have had quality strength and conditioning, and so they'll have less of an opportunity to gain as much as Notre Dame players will, and that'll be, I think, show up on the field when it's all said and done. Jamie, I wanted to move to defense. One thing that I've seen a tremendous amount of is just fundamentals on defense. It, you know, we've watched some practices now, full practices, a number of them, and it seems like that's really all they focus on is just constant fundamental work. There's not a whole lot of 11-on-11 lining up, teaching them this, teaching them that. It's all, whenever we see it, it's all fundamentals and that type of thing. To you, you know, as a defensive player, how important do you think that that is? And do you think that's the smartest thing they can do right now?
Yeah, I do think it's the smartest thing they can do. I love that they're doing it. I think, you know, in a lot of cases, there can be too much kind of standing around in position groups, get together, and they're walking through things and installing and worrying about all those things. And obviously, installs is important, and they want to have the right scheme in when the time is right in the fall. But there's so much in individual where, I mean, you're realizing where Brian Kelly was mentioning about Dalen Hayes and how he needs to, you know, squeeze the tight end when the run's away from him and go and wrong arm a trap and stuff. And he's still learning to do that. And to me, I'm like, this guy's already been here a year. He should have already kind of had some of that stuff down, you know, and maybe they were spending too much time on the bigger picture than working on these kind of like finer details of just like the little things, like reading a down block from a tackle and knowing what block's going to come his way. And I think, you know, that kind of thing. The one thing that I noticed when I was there and I watched practice was that there was a lot of teaching going on. It was constant teaching and not a lot of yelling. I mean, they were enthusiastic, but there wasn't a lot of degrading or anything. They weren't chewing guys out. I heard Mike Elko get on Asmar Bilal for not finishing up a tackle one play, but you got to call a guy out for that. But other than that, most of the time I've just seen, even from Mike Elson, who's always been kind of a loud presence at practice, you see him realizing those, like working on those finer details a little bit more. And to me, that is going to be what makes a difference later on. And that's what spring football is about. It's building those base fundamentals and getting them to where they need to be before they don't have time to work on that kind of stuff in season. So, to me, I mean, I'm glad that they're doing it right now, and I think it's the right approach.
You know, I watched Clark Lee a lot these last couple of practices, and man, that guy's a teacher. I don't remember seeing a guy that maybe Bill Lewis was probably one of the guys that stood out as just a great teacher and spends a tremendous amount of time just focused on the true fundamentals of things. You know, he spends a lot of time on just steps, taking proper steps to attack a hole or attack a tackle. And I just really think that that's something that the linebackers have lacked for a while. And I think we're going to see huge dividends on that when it's all said and done. I think that, you know, that by them spending that much time on these fundamentals, that we'll see that, I guess, pay off when the season comes. And I guess that's really my next question for you, Jamie, is do you think there's any problem with focusing so much on fundamentals this spring that it kind of hurts a little bit in install and getting ready for your scheme and getting guys knowing what it is? Because it doesn't matter, you know, what fundamentals you have if you don't know what you're doing. Any cause for concern on that?
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned about them kind of focusing more on the fundamentals, because I think where the program is in terms of where they all are on the defensive side of the ball, that's what they need the most. That's what they need to work on. And, you know, it's great if they have a ton of scheme put in early on in the season and they can do what You know, if you look at Brian Van Gorder, that in the beginning of the 2015 season, they had all this scheme that confused Texas, and the defense looked lights out. But when it came down to it later in the year, as the season wore on, you saw the lack of fundamentals kind of help break down what should have been I think a much better defense. And I don't think that in the end it's going to matter more that they block or that they defeat blocks, that they tackle better, that when they're there in coverage they can finish on a play. That's the kind of stuff that's going to matter. And if they can't play good base defense, you might as well not even get out on the field. So, they can worry about the scheme as everything goes along, but until they're ready to do the little things, to blow up a trap, to go and, make a play and fight against a block, you're not going to be able to play good football. So, I think they needed to be rebuilt in a certain sense and built back up to where they need to be. So to me, I think the way they're approaching it is the best possible way to do things.
Okay, Matt. You know, as of now, I think really the two biggest issues are safety and D-line. I asked Kelly at the last press conference about the safety position, and you could tell he was struggling to find an answer, trying to find something positive to say. He follows up with, well, Nick Coleman's our best guy back there right now. Matt, does that say something that here's a guy who's never played the position before, he's suddenly your best guy? And guys who, have played it, like Devin Studstill and Jalen Elliott and DJ Morgan, here's guys that should be better than him right now, and they're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning. I think that it's not a good situation back there, and recruiting's partly to deal with it. Just the inability to get quality talent over the last 3 or 4 years. But I also think inexperience is definitely a part of it as well. Studstill and Elliott are still technically freshmen. They played last year, struggled a lot, but I think you can't give up on those guys yet. But I mean, it's not like he's making plays that Max Redfield wasn't making in practice. So they may have looked into a situation there with him. It's still far too early to tell, but I mean, he's doing a lot of good things to warrant that positive response by Kelly. So just getting Jordan Ginmark Heath in and then watching the progress of Isaiah Robertson, it could very well help with that situation, that safety, but they just need one of Studstill or Elliott to step up just to make me feel a little bit better about where they're at.
You know, if you talk about pure coverage ability, I think Isaiah Robertson's the best safety they have in that regard other than Coleman. I've been really impressed with Isaiah Robertson as a coverage guy. He looks really good. Now, does he know where he's supposed to be? Is he doing all the right things? I don't know. But a guy his size shouldn't be able to cover as well as he does. And again, he's not a guy that's played a ton of safety either. So, I like his potential, and you mentioned Ginmark Heath, and there's a guy that I really like potentially as well. But, boy, they were so high on Studstill and Elliott, and I think Elliott's starting to play a little better, and Studstill looked better in coverage than he has, before. I would just think that those guys would be a little bit further ahead at this point, and that's a concern for me. Now, I know a lot of people, think that I harp all the time or that I'm always negative, and of course, part of my job is to point out the negative and the positive, and we do both of that on the show. And, each week I bring up the D-line, and it's because it is a concern. And, I just wanted to go and give some people a little bit of a reality check on this defensive line and what you have to work with right now. For instance, last year Notre Dame's defense only had 14 sacks on the entire year, and they were ranked 117th in sacks. There were only six teams that had less sacks than Notre Dame did last year. Surprisingly, Michigan State was one of them, but that's a big reason they also finished 3-9. But out of those 14 sacks, not one of those sacks came from anybody who's on the defensive line right now. Not one. Not Matt, not one sack. Here's another fact for you. Nico Fertitta had as many tackles for loss as Andrew Trombetti did last year. Nico didn't. He played for what? Maybe seven plays. I don't know. It was crazy. Here's another one. Chase Claypool on special teams had as many tackles as Dalen Hayes had last year. On special teams, he had more tackles or as many. Now, folks, that's when Notre Dame had Isaac Rochelle and Jerron Jones, two players that were good players that were occupying, you know, offensive line. I mean, those are scary numbers when you think about it. They don't have those guys this year, and they were that fruitless when it came to defensive line productivity. Jamie, give us some hope here.
Well, that makes it all sound pretty bleak, but I'm very hopeful about Dalen Hayes, and I know he didn't really have the most productive first season, but what we've seen from him this spring, I've been totally impressed by him. I think he is someone who's grown quite a bit in terms of just learning the position of playing defensive end, and he's a lot stronger versus the run than he was. Just finding himself last year, I thought he was kind of running around a little bit. He chased the ball, but he didn't really seem to kind of find it as much. And now you kind of see him finding, himself around the ball a lot more. And we've seen a couple of really, really exciting things, from him as a pass rusher too, that you kind of hope that, he can be a breakout guy there. And in the same sense too, Julian Okwara, who, I still think he's only 230 pounds. He's still got to gain some weight. I don't know if he's going to be, an overly effective player versus the run yet, because I just don't think he's big and strong enough yet to kind of hold up at the point of attack. But, we've seen some good things from him in a pass rusher too. So that's encouraging. I think that, defensive tackle, it is a concern. And, you'd like to see Daniel Cage in better shape. But then again, Brian Kelly said the other day that he's having the best spring that he's had here. So, hopefully, what he's saying is truthful, and that, Cage is kind of taking a step forward in some of these practices that we haven't seen. I think that I mean, other than Dalen Hayes, there's nothing that I can really kind of hold on to in terms of I've seen guys making plays. It's not that guys have looked bad. Jonathan Bonner has actually shown some nice flashes, some things that I didn't expect to see from him as a pass rusher. But, Mike Treadway, I still think it has got, some potential. And, Jerry Tillery, we know when he's turned on all the way, to the point where he needs to be, he can be a baller, but he's got to get to that level. So, I think Mike Elson's got a long road ahead of him, and, we'll just see where they're at in the season, but it's definitely an area that, people should be worried about.
Well, I got another question, but I mean, I think that people need to realize that the issue they're having with D tackle is, if people remember, they had not necessarily a very good year, and they at the end to pick up guys, and they picked up Daniel Cage, who turned out to be a fairly good player, and Pete Makwa, who hasn't done anything yet, and then the following year, they take three projects, and I'm not saying that they're bad players. I just think that all three of them had a tremendous amount of work to do, right? In Elijah Taylor, who, certainly not the biggest body in the world. When you watched his film, he didn't show like a tremendous amount of effort. Micah Treadway, who showed effort but just was very green as a player. And then, even Kelly saying, hey, Brandon Tiesum comes in as basically a basketball player, and the coaches there don't know how to coach. And it's like, why did you take three guys like that so early when all three of them were a project? And then the year before, you took two guys who were a project that weren't on your radar. That's why we're having this issue right now. That's exactly why we're having this issue, is because you took three projects and two projects the year before that, and not one of them was a sure thing at that point. And so you got five guys that are projects, and let's be honest, none of them have developed at this point. None of them have developed into quality players. And that's why you're having this issue. Now, Jamie, when you look at the – I think the question here that people want to know is, when you look at the D-line group, do you see the problems as a lack of talent? Do you see it as a lack of effort? Or do you see it as maybe a lack of development? They're just not developed properly. What do you see are the problems here?
Well, I definitely think what you brought up, Mike, is correct in terms of their recruiting. You know, I think you can't take that many guys that need to develop. If you take one or two guys in a couple classes, that's fine. But when you take so many guys that need to be developed in that way, it puts a lot of pressure for those guys to come through. And, you know, to be fair to Elijah Taylor, too, he's been hurt this spring. So maybe he would have had a breakout spring and we didn't know. So, you know, that's certainly, you know, something that we can't really, you know, we can't really be down on him right now for being hurt. But, yeah, I don't know. I think there's some guys that, you know, they need to get more out of in terms of their talent level. But, you know, I really think part of it is, you know, there's all these little things that go into it. You know, some of it might be coaching and development, and some of it might be, you know, the strength and conditioning. Like we were just talking about the night and day difference between, you know, the strength and conditioning. Well, defensive line, like it's a critical thing for them to develop in strength and conditioning, especially for those guys that, you know, we were mentioning as kind of projects when they came in that needed to be developed at a certain level. A lot of that was physical development. So if they're not getting that, then, you know, they're not going to be at the level they need to be. So I think it's a combination of things. You know, where I see someone like Jerry Tillery. I mean, you've seen him just absolutely dominate guys on certain plays. And you know, that's not going to be an every play thing. But he can play at a level, and I've seen games from him where he's played at a level that can make him a great player. It's just being that player week to week, play to play, you know, series to series, that kind of thing. If he can get to that level, then he's someone that can be on that level. And Dalen Hayes, you know, he's someone who was a big time recruit but needed development, and it looks like he's getting that development now. But I just think it's a combination of things, and you know, they've gotten guys on the, even though they've signed some 4-star guys, they've been on the lower end of the 4-star spectrum in terms of, you know, they could be great players, but they needed to do some certain things, and they just haven't done those certain things yet.
I think when you look at it, you got guys like Hayes, Dalen Hayes, Khalid Kareem, Julian Aquara, where I think that those are like real guys. You know, they're guys that if you just develop them and coach them up, they're going to be solid players. And then you got a bunch of other guys that weren't, you know, they was going to take a lot, both physically and coaching, to get them ready to go. A guy like, you know, Ade Ogundeji is a guy that has a lot of potential and talent, but it's going to take a lot of coaching plus body build to get him to where he needs to be. But it's a nice mound of clay. But you can do that if you take Khalid Kareem and you take Dalen Hayes and Julian Aquara on top of that. Then Ade can develop and have time to do that. The problem you're running in at the interior defensive line is you took five guys who needed both, you know, body build and coaching. And then, to be honest, a lot of them needed to kick up the rear end to get going. You know, it has been so long since Notre Dame had four guys across the line of scrimmage who played as hard as Sheldon Day. I don't even remember last time that happened. You know, I think Isaac Rochelle played hard. You know, I think he played hard and got the most out of his talent when all was said and done. You know, but there's just not enough of them there. There's not enough of them that are going to be guys that are just going to work their tail off like Sheldon Day did. Or... or I'm just trying to think, you know, gosh, when they had guys like Trevor Laws and Derek Landry inside, you know, there were two guys who just played with their hair on fire.
Aaron Lynch played with his hair on fire.
Well, he did.
Yeah, Romeo Okwara played hard. He had a good motor.
Well, he did at the end, yeah, but not before, but he did at the end. He certainly did. But again, he, you know, I think physically he needed to get developed. You know, so he was a guy that was not necessarily a high four-star player, played before his time, shouldn't have played as early as he did. They lost a year there, but he needed physical development. And then once he got some physical development and started realizing his potential, then the effort came and he developed into a very good player for Notre Dame. So, again, these are things that they need to fix in recruiting. You can't take a bunch of projects. You got to take guys that are lead players. You have to. You can't take projects. And I know that's easier said than done. But, you know, they took Taylor, Dutredway, and TSM in July or June. You know, and they took them all in June. You didn't need to take all three of those guys that early. And I think that you're now seeing it. And what you've done with that is Tillery has to play nose guard where he's a better three technique, and you have Bonner, who's a better strong side defensive end, having to play three technique. And so you got two guys playing out of position because of the terrible recruiting you've done. I shouldn't say terrible, but the under the poor recruiting in certain areas that you've done, you know, that's really impacted, and that's why you're in this position. So having said all that, guys, I mean, when I sit and think about it, you know, especially if Kevin Stepherson plays next year, I feel pretty confident about 7 out of the 9 position groups. You know, I feel like Notre Dame's in a really good situation at quarterback, you know, as long as Wimbush stays healthy. I love all three running backs. I think they're great. I think C.J. Holmes could help if somebody gets hurt. So they got great talent and depth there. I like the wide receiver talent. I think it needs to be developed a little bit, but I'm starting to see that, and I think that you can have some real good playmakers there. I love the talent and depth at tight end, you know, especially seeing Brock Wright emerge as a pass catcher, and we know he's going to be a physical, tough player. So I like tight end. You know, Alizé Jones got to get a little bit better hands, but he's certainly got a lot of talent. I like O-line. I think O-line's going to be very good this year. I like their attitude, and I like that they're focused on running the football. I think linebacker is going to be better than a lot of people think, because I like what I see from Clark Lee, and I think Niles Morgan is a difference maker. I think Tevon Coney and Greer Martini are going to give you solid play. Maybe not spectacular, but solid play, be more productive than they have been. And I think Drew Tranquil has been playing a lot of Rover, and I think that's an ideal position for him. Asmar, you know, as a run defender, can be a good player. But I think linebacker is going to be pretty good, and I like corner. So it's safety and D-line that are the issues here. Now, if there's one position that I wish they didn't have an issue, it would be D-line, certainly. But when you think about it, guys, I mean, Matt, 7 out of 9 positions look pretty good. You know, if Yoon is good, you know, back
if Yoon is
no,
good,
I said if he's back and healthy, and I think Yoon is a solid player. There's no doubt about it. If healthy, I think that their punter's good. You know, so these things look good. You know, there's not a lot of teams that I think can say right now that they feel pretty good about 7 out of the 9 key positions. You know, heading into it.
Especially coming off 4-8.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be an interesting year just because there's still a lot of young talent, young quarterback. So, I mean, the ceiling is high for this team. It's kind of like you and Jamie were talking about for the last 40 minutes just with the D-line. I mean, that's going to make or break Notre Dame's year. And if Elko can get them to a level of play where they can impact the game, maybe not win it, but just impact it, I think that could go a long way towards having a kind of season that Notre Dame wants to have and the kind of season Brian Kelly needs to have. But, I mean, I think it just all comes down to the D-line.
I think they're going to have pressure. I think they're going to get pressure just based off of the scheme and the talent they have. I think pressure is not going to be the issue. I think it's going to be against the run, and that's always a big concern. If you can't stop the run, I don't care how much talent you have in the back end, it ain't going to matter much. And that's really concerning to me when you play a team like Stanford, you play a team like Georgia and you play a team like USC, you know, that's a little bit scary for me. And that's where I have the biggest question mark heading into it. Jamie, any thoughts do you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, that against the run is where I would be worried, you know, just in terms of how they're going to handle that up front. But I also think that, you know, you're kind of going to kind of see early in the year based on who they play early, you know, where they are with against the run. You know, Temple, they're going to run the ball. I know they're changing up scheme, but they're still, you know, this basis of them, is they're still going to run the ball a lot. You know, Boston College is, you know, they're a downhill team, right? They're a pounded ground and pound team. Michigan State is a pounded team. You know, Georgia is a team that, you know, look at their backs. They're going to run the football, right? So I think you're going to learn a lot and early on about where they stand. And that also is, I mean, it's, I mean, you like them to be kind of ready to go right away, but you're also, you're going to see them kind of get some practice in terms of toughening them up for the rest of that schedule, where to the point where if they didn't play that schedule, maybe you'd be worried that USC would run all over them. But that could kind of help prepare them for that later on. So, you know, hopefully it's just kind of like a step-by-step process where they're keep getting better and more guys step forward as they go along there. But yeah, that is the one thing that worries me. But I mean, like you said, I'm excited. I'm very excited about all those other positions, and very excited about the offense. I'm excited about, we didn't even talk about the running backs, you know, today, which, you know, we've been raving about all spring. So yeah, I'm very excited.
I mean, I think that there's a lot to get excited about with this team and go from there. Now, there's what, essentially five practices left, or no, actually four now, because they had one on Sunday. So they have this Wednesday, then they take a week off, and they have Wednesday again, then Friday, and then, of course, the last one is the spring game. They went 60 plays practice scrimmage on Sunday, so obviously they're going to be a little banged up and everything. They'll probably go light on next Wednesday, I would assume. Or this coming Wednesday, because they did so much and they're getting ready for Easter and that type of thing. That next Wednesday, we're supposed to get full access. Here's the question, Jamie. If you're Brian Kelly, do you go physical on that Wednesday? Because to be honest, I don't think you can be a physical team unless you play physical. I just don't think you can, especially if you're trying to stop the run and do the things that you want to do. I don't think you can be a great run defense unless you practice 11 on 11 bashing into each other and learning how to stop the run and how to hold up against the point of attack and shed a block and find the back. I have a feeling they'll probably go light. We won't see them do a whole lot, but does that make sense? Jamie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they would probably go light. You know, I would hope that maybe the first half of practice, they kind of, you know, maybe run a little bit of 9-on-7 or something like that. You know, half line kind of be a little bit more physical earlier, and then maybe back off towards the end of that, just so they kind of, you know, maintain what they've been kind of working on all spring. But yeah, my guess is they'll probably back off a little bit for that. But you know, they want to have guys healthy for the spring game, and that's probably what they are worrying about a little bit. But I mean, it's always interesting to see what in the spring game how they approach things too, because you know they never tend to you know, show too much, but they usually do like to kind of run it a little bit more in the spring game instead of chucking it around. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there.
I think they'll run in the spring game, definitely. I think that's what they'll do, because they'll throw it around a little bit, but you know, it's going to be very vanilla and boring like it is every spring game, you know. But it may be exciting if they decide to run the football, because I'm just not sure they're going to be able to stop it when it comes. What's your thoughts, Matt?
I have no thoughts on that. I just don't want to see Brendan Wimbush get hit at all.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. And I mean, I get why people say, well, gosh, why take your chances? You've been through 11 practices. Why get physical and risk getting somebody hurt, especially if Jerry Tillery or somebody like that got hurt? And I get that. I totally understand that. But we've seen what happens when you don't play physical. You know, doesn't matter if Jerry Tillery is hurt. You're getting your butt kicked anyway. It just doesn't matter. So, you know, I don't think we'll probably see it. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I won't know until the season starts. But I do know this. You can't be a physical football team unless you practice physical. You just can't. You just won't be. You can't just sit there and turn it on and turn it off and expect to do things like, you know, be physical and be very stout against the run if you never practice it. So I'm hoping that we'll see a lot of that, especially come fall. But overall, guys, there's a lot to be excited about with this team. I'm more optimistic than I was going into spring practice. I am. You guys know? Yes, no?
No, I agree.
I believe you.
Yeah. What about you, though, Matt?
I'm a wait and see kind of
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, he's Mr. Negative, I guess. All right.
I know is the kicking game is going to be spectacular.
Oh, here he goes. All right, folks, that's going to be it for the show. Hope you enjoyed that. Once again, sign up for Irish Sports Daily. Go to the front page and click on the Subscribe Now section, and you can sign up. Also, if you would, please, we'd greatly appreciate it. Share the podcast. Send it to your friends. Send it to your family. We would greatly appreciate any exposure you could give us. We will have a podcast again on Monday, and then I'm going to try and get the following Monday after the spring game, try and get Coach Kamel in here and talk to him and get him on the show a little bit as well. Probably be some recruiting stuff coming up pretty heavily as well on the show. Now that spring football is winding down, we'll start focusing a little more on recruiting, and so that'll be fun as well. And try and get some former players. We got a lot of stuff coming up for Power Hour here in the near future. If you want to advertise, hit me up, MikeFrank18@sbcglobal.net. I'll give you all the details. That's going to be it for the show. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
You've been listening to Power Hour, presented by IrishSportsDaily.com, where you can sign up for a premium subscription. Follow the Fighting Irish throughout the year on Twitter as well at ISD Update. And to listen to archive shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.